think what gave Clemson the edge this week over a Miami team that has really impressed us the last 2 weeks was the win against Auburn. They have two road victories that are very impressive to the committee. Miami's not played a winning team on the road yet, and that's something that has given Clemson a slight edge this week with their performance on the road. Wisconsin, we've said the schedule is there. We were impressed with the win over an Iowa team who defeated Ohio State the week before. Wisconsin continues to execute their offense in the manner that they do. The defense is what has really impressed this selection committee. The style of play that Wisconsin is on defense, their productivity on the defensive side of the ball is something that has really impressed the selection committee. Every win, every loss is a part of the body of work, the resume that we look at each and every week. We don't incent margin of victory, but we know when a convincing victory takes place. So if we find ourselves in that position, as we have, and I'm sure we will in the 3 weeks ahead, the selection committee will have to work hard and make sure we get it right, which we will.
It would be huge. It would be awesome for our fan base. It would be awesome for our student athletes. You know, it would be awesome for our program and recruiting and everything of that nature, especially on the national stage. It's a big ball game, and there's a lot riding on it. I mean, it's pride on our end, and if we're able to get the victory, you know, not allow them to go to the MAC championship game. So but it'll be a highly contested affair.
Well, that's why you come to the University of Toledo. You know, you come to play. One of the reasons is to come play in this football game. You know, we don't spend a ton of time singling out opponents through the off season and making one game more important than any of the other ones, because they all count the same. But you're kidding yourself if you don't think that this one, you know, doesn't mean more to our community and the fans and the people around here. You know, you can go into any office building in our city and you're going to find an office that has a Bowling Green degree on the wall, and you're going to find one right down the hall that's got a Toledo degree on the wall. So this is good for the pageant of college football and camaraderie of the fans and just everything that of what college football is all about.
Now 9 of 11 on the road. The next three games on the road against teams you beat at home, so you know they want back at you. So the challenges just keep mounting. You put wins in the bank, but there's going to be tough stretches in the season. You put wins in the bank, and our guys, I mean, on this homestand did a hell of a job. And any time you go from Sunday to Wednesday without playing, you got to win that game. That was the other problem with the Laker game. You're coming home. You play on a Tuesday. You got Wednesday and Thursday off before you play. And what's in your what taste in your mouth is the freaking Laker game. And so tonight, you go from Sunday to Wednesday, and the taste in your mouth is this game. So I can go out to dinner tonight with my son and my wife and enjoy it. That's what's important about this game right here.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. My goodness gracious, how about it? We got ourselves a new Final Four that isn't final because we're not at the end of the regular season, so it doesn't mean much, but everybody watch. Or if you didn't watch like Cush and I, you waited and got the list, so everybody knows and everybody's reacting and talking about it. We'll do it. Indeed, any surprises, not only in the Final Four, the Top Four, but in the Top Eight or the Top Ten? Does Ohio State still have a chance to climb from number nine into the Final Four by the end of the regular season? Maybe. Does that mean USC should also have a chance? Well, if Ohio State does, they doggone well better, and I don't think either one of them should. So we're going to get into that. We've got that to talk about today. We've got ourselves a battle OI-75 tonight. What's the weather going to be in Bowling Green tonight exactly? Hold on. You know what? I'm going to find out. I'm going to ask Siri. Siri, what's the weather in Bowling Green, Ohio right now? We'll find out just in a second here. Let's see if she tells us.
It seems to be a bit windy in Bowling Green.
That's it. I'm pretty sure she's missing something.
Well, that's all she says out loud, but she writes on my screen, chance of showers 100%. It's going to be wet, and about it's 42 right now. It'll be down into the upper 30s by game time when they kick it off at about 8 o'clock. But Cush, excuse me, we had 100% chance of a sneeze right there on live radio. Oh, you got to love when that happens. It just strikes.
We're off to a roaring start.
It's even
aren't we?
More fun. It's even more fun when that happens to TV people because they can't just, you know, turn their mic off like I
That's
just
true.
Did.
That's true. That's a good
they
point.
They actually have to turn their head to the side and hope that the cameraman pans or flips to another view to the other, to the co-anchor or some B-roll or something while they're sneezing on TV. Anyway, I've had that happen too, by the way, doing a TV show. So at any rate, yeah, it's going to be cold, it's going to be wet, and it's going to be fun because that's what the Battle of I-75 is all about. You heard a little bit from Mike Jinks, heard a little bit from Jason Candle in advance of the matchup tonight. And yes, we're going to hear more from Candle coming up at about 4:40 or so. A little advance look at the UT march they hope toward the MAC championship game. You heard Mike Jinks talking about trying to stop them from getting there. This isn't the deciding factor, of course. The UT still has Western Michigan to play, and BG will wrap up with Eastern Michigan. But Battle of I-75 tonight, so we've got that going for us, which is nice. We got NBA basketball coming up as well. Pistons taking on Milwaukee. They're on the road at the Bucks against the Freak. And is Bledsoe playing yet, Kush?
Yes, Bledsoe is playing now.
So it'll be a new challenge for the Pistons, and we will talk about that challenge with the new editor of DetroitBadBoys.com, Steve Hinson. That'll be coming up here in just, what, about 20 minutes or so.
Yep.
Maybe 25, depending on where we are and when we break. So that'll be Steve Hinson from DetroitBadBoys.com. And those are most of the lead stories of the day, and it's none, none of those are the one that I want to start the show with. They're back, the UCLA 3. Fresh from a Chinese prison. All right, not a Chinese prison. Fresh from a Chinese jail. All right, not really from a Chinese jail. Fresh from a 5-star hotel where they were detained for about a week under quote-unquote house arrest for stealing expensive merchandise from 3 different high-end stores in China. That's right, while UCLA was in China to play a game against Georgia Tech this past Friday, they decided as part of their travels to steal stuff. Who steals in a communist country? I mean, these are supposed to be college students, and I know they're freshmen, but do they have no idea that China is a communist country, that human rights, that due process, things that we take for granted here in the United States don't exist there? Who puts themselves in the crosshairs of the Chinese legal system? Well, these 3 Nimrods do. Cody Riley, Jalen Hill, and yes, LiAngelo Ball of the infamous Ball family, they are the ones who decided to do this. They were facing a prison sentence because, again, there's no due process and there's no leniency. Here in the United States, Kush, first offense shoplifting, chances are very good you get what?
Very light type of sentence?
Yeah, you're looking for the word fine there.
Okay.
Or you're looking for the word possibly probation.
Okay.
You're not going to jail for your first offense in shoplifting in the United States. Chances are very, very good you're not going to jail. Maybe a fine, maybe probation, maybe both. There, you're facing 3 to 10 years in prison. And guess what? The Chinese prosecutors, they have like a 99% conviction rate because, again, basically, in a country where you have no due process, you don't have any defense. If they say you did it, you essentially did it. It's just the way that it goes in
right.
China. They were facing 3 to 10 years in prison until President Donald Trump, you know, that white supremacist Donald Trump, the Jemele Hill of ESPN, was suspended for saying white supremacist Donald Trump, out of the kindness of his heart, because he was over there in China as part of a 12-day Asian tour, talking with world leaders from Asia, talked to his counterpart, the president of China, and said it would be really nice if you could help us out here and take care of this thing expeditiously and not lock these guys up. Yes, these 3 African-American basketball players from UCLA. Because of the president's kindness, because he intervened in a case in which he really had no business intervening, they did it. They admitted that they did it. They are now free. And the question was really only, when they got back, would they acknowledge that they have their freedom thanks to the President of the United States? Well, 2 of the 3 did, including LiAngelo Ball, who at a press conference just a little over an hour ago, about an hour and 20 minutes ago, all 3 read prepared statements, taking full responsibility for their actions. And yes, 2 of the 3 thanking the President of the United States for intervening on their behalf. I want you to hear LiAngelo Ball.
I'd like to start off by saying sorry for stealing from the stores in China. I didn't exercise my best judgment, and I was wrong for that. I apologize to my family, my coaches, my teammates, and UCLA for letting so many people down. I also apologize to the people of China for causing them so much trouble. I'm a young man, however, it's not an excuse for making a really stupid decision. I don't feel sorry for myself, and I've learned my lesson from this big mistake, and I'm 110% sure that I'll not make a bad decision like this one again. I also like everyone to know that this does not define who I am. My family raised me better than that, and I'm going to make myself a better person from here on out. I have the utmost respect for the Chinese Police Department as well, and I'd like to thank them for treating me so respectfully, even after I made a stupid decision. I'd like to thank Chris Carlson and Doug Erickson for staying with us and just helping us out while we were in China and taking care of us. I'm grateful for this UCLA team that stood strong beside us and made it possible for me to be sitting here in front of you all today. I respect and admire all the hard work that they put in to get us back to the United States. I would also like to thank President Trump and the United States government for the help that they provided as well. I'm grateful to be back home, and I'll never make a mistake like this again. I'm extremely sorry for those who I let down, but I'm also very thankful for all the help, love, and support that they provided. And I take full responsibility for my actions, and I'm sorry. Thank you.
A very emotional-sounding LiAngelo Ball at a press conference about an hour and a half, not quite an hour and a half ago, in Los Angeles, back in the United States, obviously, after returning from China yesterday. They again had their cases dismissed. Well, not dismissed. They were taken care of in a satisfactory manner, is the best way to say it, by the Chinese government, the Chinese legal system. Again, on the request, and it's kind of a show of goodwill, a good gesture between the two countries for President Donald Trump talking to the president of China, and essentially it's like, okay, we'll do you this solid. Remember that. And it will be, by the way. It's now a diplomatic international incident. It matters. It really does. The fact that President Trump kind of asked for a favor, asked for a solid on behalf of these three young men, that he absolutely did not have to. And if he didn't, no one could have said anything, because it's far below a shoplifting charge for three college students in China. It's far below the number of important things on a president of the United States' agenda. It doesn't even rise to the, hey, Mr. President, can you help? They weren't political prisoners. They weren't captured, you know, by the Taliban in Afghanistan. They were in China, and they chose to steal, to break the law. It would be bad enough here. It's really stupid there. He did not have to intervene, but he did. And it's important to note that he did this, and that these three individuals in the country today, it's important to note that they are African American, because had they been Caucasian, the chances are very good the president would have been accused of extending white privilege to the three students that he essentially rescued from a harsh prison sentence in China. But instead, he did this for these three African Americans, and I certainly hope this will take people like Spurs coach Greg Popovich, and yes, Pistons coach Stan Van Gundy, two of the biggest mouths that ever roared about things that they have no business talking about, staying outside or going outside of their lanes in calling the president a racist and a white supremacist. Hopefully it will give them pause and perhaps maybe even lead them to offer some sort of an apology for their previous bad statements about the president. Now, what about the boys? What about LiAngelo Ball? What about Cody Riley? What about Jalen Hill? I will say this, LiAngelo Ball and Jalen Hill should be given credit. They are the two that actually thanked the president. They also were the two that I felt were a little bit more heartfelt in their remarks to the press conference. Cody Riley was the first one to go, and he just looked straight down at his prepared statement and read from that piece of paper. I don't know if he wrote it, or if some lawyer wrote it for him. Did not sound genuine, did not sound remorseful, sounded like I'm reading whatever I was told to read. Ball sounded a little more emotional. Jalen Hill sounded a little more sincere, Yeah, Hill sounded a little more sincere as well. But not all three of them. Two of the three did. Now, what about them? I was watching a little bit of First Take this morning, which I sometimes do after listening to Mike and Mike. And, of course, we always encourage you to listen to Mike and Mike. This is the final week, of course, for Mike and Mike, as we know, Greenberg and Golic. And I don't need to get into the programming details of that. You know it's going to soon be Golic and Wingo. But at any rate, listening to Mike and Mike, and then sometimes I'll flip on TV and watch a little bit of First Take and see what the guys have to say about the lead stories of the day there. And there was a very interesting take. Difference of opinions, I should say, in their takes on, quote, First Take. Sorry about that. Stephen A. Smith, well, he sounded like me. He was just all over these three. No leniency, I don't want to say no forgiveness, but he's not going to just forgive them and dismiss it as being youthful indiscretion and just to say it's an honest mistake. And he was saying they should be suspended for half a season, if not maybe a full season. Will Cain was a guest. He said the exact same thing. This must be a heavy hammer. How stupid do you have to be? There should be a stupid tax in play here. You are taxed for being stupid enough to steal in a communist country where human rights are violated on a regular basis, where human rights and due process are not given to people in that system. And by the way, it says something, and I don't want to go too overtly political on this part of it. I mentioned the Trump part, and I'll stop there. But just to say it, you know, the state of California leadership has forbidden official state travel to states in the United States because of political decisions they don't like. They have forbidden state travel to Texas and North Carolina and other places where the state governments there have instituted regular normalized bathroom laws, meaning if you're a guy, use the guys' facilities and locker rooms and showers. If you're a girl, use the girls. And because of that, they have forbidden travel because they feel like it doesn't guarantee the quote-unquote rights of every American. They're worried about the rights, so they won't go to Texas, but they'll send their basketball team, UCLA, a state school, to China, a place where human rights don't exist. Why? Because there's money to be made. Expanding the brand in the Chinese market, selling UCLA gear, there's money to be made there in this place that violates human rights. It's important to note that, just for the sake of saying it. But then Max Kellerman came on First Take and gave his side of the story. Oh, my goodness. You know, we don't have to punish them very much. Haven't they been punished enough? Wait, what? They were being put up while they were there with the team in a 5-star hotel. After they got busted, they were remanded to their rooms in that 5-star hotel, placed under nothing more than house arrest at the hotel while the situation was worked out through the courts there, the justice or legal system. I won't call it justice system because they don't have much justice in that country until, as I say, President Trump worked his way through this thing and helped get them released. So 5 days, it's a point that Will Cain made to Kellerman, that's punishment enough now? So they came back home today and had this press conference, and shortly after reading the statements that I just played for you, well, I played one of them for you, the announcement was made. Steve Alford says they are now suspended from basketball activities, meaning they cannot go to practice, they cannot travel with the team, they cannot suit up, they can't do anything during this indefinite suspension. Now, that sounds pretty harsh. All appropriately harsh, by the way. I don't mean harsh as in, that's bad. Appropriately harsh, because I think it should be harsh. What they did was more than just shoplift at a Walgreens in L.A. They shoplifted in China, creating an international diplomatic incident that required the intervention of the American government. It's a big A deal. They have suspended them now for, well, indefinitely. The question now becomes, what does indefinite mean in the mind of Steve Alford and the administration at UCLA? Alford said, quote, they will have to earn their way back. All right. What does earning your way back mean from something like this? If you recall, Jim Kushlin last year, Grayson Allen had his two or three different episodes with tripping and unsportsmanlike behavior during games that caused an indefinite suspension from Coach Mike Krzyzewski. As it turned out, that indefinite suspension lasted, I want to say, 10 to 12 days, but because of a gap in their schedule, only cost him one or two games. And a lot of people said that's not enough of an indefinite suspension. Is an indefinite suspension going to be half the season for these three guys? Or is it going to be just one to two games? And what will be an appropriate punishment for this internationally embarrassing incident for the UCLA University, as well as the basketball program? And since now that it has involved the United States government, it's an embarrassing incident for the United States, because it makes it look like to people in Asia, this is what Americans do. They come over here privileged, as they are, on full scholarships, traveling in style, first class or private jets, staying in five-star hotels and ripping off our stores. It's an extraordinarily embarrassing thing for a number of reasons. Should this indefinite suspension be something that actually has teeth? Should it be a half a season? Should it be 10 games? Should it be, you know, a designated period of time? Or should Steve Alford be able to say, okay, they worked hard enough, they're back after a week?
I'm looking at it, and I think it. I guess I would call it half the season, because the thing that popped into my head was out of conference play. They should miss all of that. I mean, because
how many games would that be?
I was literally clicking on their schedule to count that right now. Actually,
I mean, regular season games these days are these. In this era, if you will, excuse me. Most teams play
11, that's 11
somewhere
more
around 25 games.
That's 11. Yeah, it's 25 games where you get conference tournaments. And by my count, looking at UCLA's schedule, that's 11 more games they would be if they went out, just saying all the out-of-conference games. That makes them eligible for December 29th against Washington State when Pac-12 play starts.
Okay, good. Then I think you and I are on the same page. So you think that's in a 10, 11, 12-game range would be an appropriate thing, provided, by the way, that they over the course of this period of time, they go to classes.
Yep.
They keep their grades up.
Yep.
They exhibit perfect behavior. Perhaps maybe do, I don't know, some community service, some campus service, something of that
possible
nature to really, quote-unquote, work their way back and not just sit out this period of time. That 10, 12 games might be enough.
Yeah, I hope it's not just something like a week, let's get through the Thanksgiving holiday, and then everyone's going to forget about this and we can bring them back in. That teaches them nothing. It really does, because I believe there's also an extra angle in all this, too. I don't think the president and the forces of our government would go to bat like that as much for regular old you or me in the same situation.
Absolutely right. That's exactly correct. You're right. And he shouldn't. He shouldn't. Like I said, if they were captured by the Taliban or something, or taken prisoner, or were political prisoners, like the one young student who was visiting North Korea.
I know you're the one you're referring to. Yeah.
Otto Warmbier, if you remember, he was trying to steal like a flag off of the wall to take home as a souvenir.
Something like that.
Again, a stupid decision in a communist country, for crying out loud. But he ended up being thrown into quote unquote jail, which essentially was a torture session for a year, and he came back in a coma and died. In a situation like that, you would see the United States government wanting to get involved. But for you and I, if I go on vacation to China, or if I go on vacation to, I don't know, pick another socialist or communist country where civil rights are and human rights are violated routinely and shoplifted, you know what? I'm on my own.
Right.
These guys got the president of the United States to intervene on their behalf and created a very, very dangerous, very highly publicized international incident, and especially LiAngelo Ball, because his family has a reality show on the internet. I mean, it's a very high-profile deal. It really, really is, and I think it's something that should be treated that way by UCLA. So an indefinite suspension is where we are. I'm in agreement with you, maybe 10, 11, 12 games. I'd like to know what other people think. 866-240-1065, what's an appropriate sentence slash, not sentence, their legal case is over now, thanks to the president. What is their suspension? What should their sentence? What's an appropriate suspension period of time? What should that be for these three individuals? By the way, I want to apologize. I heard most of the first statement read today by the three individuals. I heard all of the last two. In the part that I heard from the first one, I did not hear him say thank you to President Trump. I heard the last two. That's why I started this show by saying two out of the three thanked him. According to ESPN, I'm incorrect. It says all three players, as well as Alford, the head coach, and UCLA's athletic director, Dan Guerrero, they all offered their thanks to the president. So my apologies and congratulations. What's the word I'm looking for here? Well done, appropriate, good job. You did what you should have done to Riley, to Ball, LiAngelo Ball, and to Jalen Hill. All three of them did express their gratitude to the United States government for helping to make this happen for them. So wanted to get that clear for the record. Now, Kush, let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
Wild Stat of the Day has to do with the Battle of I-75, the 82nd meeting. And on that note, a few fun facts here for the rivalry. Currently, the Rockets are enjoying a seven-game I-75 winning streak that began in 2010, but the longest win streak belongs to the Falcons, who won 12 straight from 1955 through 1966. Toledo has the largest margin of victory in a single game, 63-0, way back in 1935. And finally, the all-time series is basically even. Bowling Green, 39-38-4 against the Rockets. So there's some wild stats for you regarding the Battle of I-75 for tonight's game. All right, we'll get a quick time out here. We'll come back. We got a lot to do. I want to take your phone calls. Also, going to talk a little Pistons basketball here as Detroit continues, hopefully, their hot start. They take on the Bucks tonight, and we're going to talk to the editor of DetroitBadBoys.com, Steve Hinson, coming up right here on the...
Back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
That was the other problem with the Laker game. You're coming home. You play on a Tuesday. You got Wednesday, Thursday off before you play, and what's in your taste in your mouth is the freaking Laker game. And so tonight you go from Sunday to Wednesday, and the taste in your mouth is this game. So I can go out to dinner tonight with my son and my wife and enjoy it. That's what's important about this game right here.
Rolling on, we are. Rolling on, are we? It's 3:43. Thanks for staying with us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. A lot of stuff still to do today. Coming up at about 4:40, we're going to talk with Jason Candle, head coach at UT, about tonight's Battle of I-75. Also have some tickets to give away to a couple of great shows, Beat the Box Office tickets. But right now we want to talk about NBA basketball, Pistons style. Pistons have gotten themselves off to a great start this season, one of the best records in the Eastern Conference, certainly much better than their Central Division competition Cavaliers. They're 10-3. Three games clear of the Bucks, 3.5 over the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Central standings right now. Joining us to talk more about the Pistons and how they're doing it is the new editor of DetroitBadBoys.com, Steve Hinson, returns to the program. Hey, Steve, thanks for the time here in Toledo. What's going on?
Oh, sure thing. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Hey, Steve, at what point does it cease to be a hot start and an indicator of what's to come? Like in baseball, we often talk about this. Jim Cushlin and I do, and a lot of folks do. They kind of use the 40-game mark as you know what you are 40 games into a 162-game season. Whatever you are then is pretty much what you're going to be. Injuries and trade deadline deals notwithstanding, that's kind of what you are. It's not just a hot start at that point. How many games does it take? How far do we need to go to realize that this is who the Pistons are rather than you're just off to a good start?
You know, I think we've got a pretty decent sense at this point. You know, certainly not that they're going to maintain this, 77% win streak. That would be a 63-win team. But in a lot of ways, I think that we've gotten some good flashes as to what this team is. We've seen that this is a very deep team, that they're able to go pretty much throw anybody on the roster other than their two-way players and get some pretty solid performance. And we're seeing them as a top-10 offense and a top-10 defense, and both of those seem like they could be reasonable. Neither one of their standings in on the offensive side of the ball or defensive side really looks too out of whack. Certainly, you know, there's been a lot of 50-50 games, and you're only going to get the coin toss game to come up head so many times, so they're going to drop a few of those moving forward. But I think we're getting a pretty good sense as to what this team's identity is looking like.
Yeah, and, you know, at the start of the season when they got going in on maybe the first five, six, seven games, I think that's when, like, you know, all right, everybody, some teams start slow, some teams start fast, et cetera, but we are 13, and I know that's still just a small sampling size out of 82, but it's how they're winning. And we've talked about this a number of times when we analyze the Pistons. It's the fact that they don't have a dominant player. They don't have a LeBron or a Russell Westbrook. Somebody's throwing in 29, 30 a night and then supporting players. They have a very balanced team. Their leading scorer is at 20 points. Everybody seems to know their role. And more than know it, they're comfortable with it. Nobody feels like they have to do more than what their little piece of the puzzle is. It's kind of like, since you're there in Detroit, it makes sense to talk about an assembly line at an auto plant. You've got your particular spot in the line. If you do your job and keep up your quota and everybody else does theirs, you're going to have a great product at the end of the day. And nobody seems to want to overdo that. And I think that's important. That's something that Stan has instilled into these guys.
You know, that's a great point. I think that speaks to a couple of players in particular who may have taken a step back in handing off some of those extra responsibilities, whether it's Andre Drummond with his post-up game not going to the post as much and not doing as much with those hooks that were just so ineffective for him, and finding another way to contribute. And also Reggie Jackson seems to be doing a much better job in terms of getting away from the hero ball, understanding when he needs to defer in the offense, and then other times, especially these past few games, they really seem to turn it on once they fall down by 10 points or so, and a lot of that has to do with Reggie Jackson getting a bit more aggressive and looking for a shot and taking over a little bit. And so he's been able to balance those times of when he needs to really dominate the offense and when he needs to, make sure that Tobias Harris is getting involved and letting Andre Drummond do some of that facilitating that he's been doing so well. So kudos to both of those guys so far.
Yeah, no question about it. We're talking Pistons basketball with Steve Hinson, who is the editor now of DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. Tonight's matchup is with the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Bucks are a playoff team from a year ago that got better, presumably, with the acquisition via trade of Eric Bledsoe, an all-star, to team up with the Greek Freak. How long do you think it'll take before they become comfortable with one another? He buys into their Jason Kidd's, offense and defense and style, and they find the right chemistry with one another to be what they're going to be.
So far, so good. They've won their first three games since the Eric Bledsoe trade and have been playing some pretty solid basketball in all of those. The defense has looked like it's been some of the best that they've been putting up so far this year. It's going to be a tough matchup. Anytime you're going up against talent like Giannis, it's not going to be an easy one. This is actually one of the few times that the Pistons are going into the game as an underdog. It's only the fourth time this year, so that's kind of interesting. So it'll be a tough matchup. It'll hopefully, the Pistons just manage to stay in it, and then like another one of those 50-50 games that hopefully they can just come out on top and keep their five-game win streak alive.
Yeah, no question. And, you talk about the fact that they've won three in a row with Bledsoe being in the lineup. But, they're not anywhere near what they're going to be. And that's kind of what I mean when I say when they develop at all. He scored 13, 11, and 15 in their three, and he has not shot the ball well at all. He's, in fact, 40%, 33%, and 40% in the three games from the floor. He's not comfortable yet. I guess my point is, this could be a dangerous Eastern Conference team to look at, with the Cavaliers seemingly have taken some giant steps backwards, at least until Isaiah Thomas comes back, and then we'll reevaluate that. For now, they do not look like the beast of the East. The Celtics do, but, I think the loss of Hayward is going to catch up to them at some point in time. If you're looking for somebody else to fill the void as a real true top contender in the East, the Pistons might be somebody that you talk about, but I feel like the Bucks, when Bledsoe gets comfortable and becomes the 20-point-a-game scorer that he was in Phoenix and really is a great complement to the Freak, to Antetokounmpo, do you think this might be a dark horse contender to really make some serious playoff noise in the East?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you're right that so far Bledsoe hasn't been necessarily contributing to those wins they've had. Giannis has just been playing extremely well. The numbers he's posted on this win streak are just absurd. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 30 points a game and 12 rebounds and a few blocks and steals. So he's certainly been the dominant force leading that charge, and Bledsoe probably does still have some time that he needs to figure out where he fits in. And it will be interesting to see how it is that he fits in. You you think of Giannis as a not necessarily a shooter and a guy who's going to do most of his damage by getting to the rim, and so we talk so much about spacing out there, and Bledsoe's not really a floor spacer. He's dangerous in the pick and roll and attack in the basket, and so will the fit ever come around? I think betting on talent that it probably will, and I definitely think you're right that they could be making a push as to getting up in that top three by the end of the season.
Jim Cushlin is with us as well. Steve Henson, he's got a question for you about these Pistons. Go ahead, Jimmy.
And one thing I'm looking at for the Pistons, at least back to this game tonight, is despite the things that they've done, five-game win streak and 10-3, second in the East and all that, they've done it these last couple games without a couple of guys out hurt, so they've had different rotations and guys have produced. But word that I'm reading is Stanley Johnson is expected back tonight, as well as John Lewis. So now this team could be a little more complete as they take on a Milwaukee team that's just getting their feet wet. Give us the full update. Make sure I'm not saying anything wrong on these injured guys coming back.
That's the word I've heard, too, that Johnson and Lewis are supposed to be back tonight. And I think Johnson in particular is going to be a big boost back just to have another strong perimeter defensive player to throw at Giannis. It would be a pretty tough matchup to have Tobias Harris and Reggie Bullock splitting the duties on keeping him in check. So it'll be nice getting Johnson back, and hopefully he's ready to go 100%. John Luer, he is probably the only guy on the roster who hadn't been playing well prior to his injury. And so if he can get back out there and do some of that glue guy stuff that he has been doing so well, great. But also, Anthony Tolliver has been such a strong piece in his replacement that, you know, it'll be interesting to see where John Lewis fits into the rotation with his return.
Steve, would you say that this at this point of the season, you know, roughly a month into the season, are the Pistons the surprise team of the NBA? Is that going a little too far? Are they the most improved team, perhaps, from last year to this year, just based on what we've seen thus far, or is that a little bit extreme?
Whenever I'm seeing others around the NBA, it feels like we're pretty close to it with being Pistons fans or being Pistons followers. Maybe it's that we're too close to it, but I see a lot of national folks that they're talking about the Pistons. They're talking about Tobias Harris's improvement. Andre Drummond's getting a lot of attention. So I think that both the Pistons are at this point the most surprising team and probably the most improved team. And a lot of that does have to do with the improvements with Tobias's game and Andre Drummond taking some nice steps forward, and Stan Van Gundy just certainly deserves some credit with making some switches to the way the offense looks, getting flexible with his rotation. I think that they probably ought to be called the surprise of the league right now, just because some of the other candidates have been sort of evening out. Orlando's fallen back a little bit from their hot start. Cleveland seems to be getting their head straight.
Well, they might be. I'm not sure about that last one as far as Cleveland. I think they're maybe the biggest surprise in the other direction with how bad they are, considering the fact that they're three-time Eastern Conference champion defenders. Steve, Andre Drummond, you mentioned him, and Kush, I don't know if you're still tracking the free throw shooting percentage. We were just amazed that about a week ago he was at 75% at 30 out of 40 after being a career 38%.
And, yes, I'm still looking at that. He's still at 63%, 36 of 57 on the year.
So hanging up there, hanging strong. It's good. If he can keep it above 60, it would be an honest-to-God, genuine basketball miracle to go from 38% career to over 60 if he can do that for the season. I think you and I both talked, Jim, a double nickel. If he was at 55,
yes,
it would be great steps forward in his career to keep building on that. But, Steve, free throw shooting notwithstanding, he's averaging 13.7 and 15.6. I mean, he just continues to be an absolute beast on the glass. I don't know if the Pistons realize I'm sure they do, but I don't know if every fan really realizes how much value there is in 15 rebounds a game and how difficult that is to do in today's very athletic NBA.
And it is. He is certainly dominant on the boards. The But the big thing for Andre that I've been following for him this year has been his improvements on his offensive efficiency, excuse me, and his activity on the defensive end. And ever since he got called out by Joel Embiid in that one game that he doesn't play defense, his defense has been really strong so far this year. And he's really been doing a great job with his matchups. His true shooting percentage, which had hovered right around the 50% mark since Stan Van Gundy's come in and he's been emphasizing that back to the basket game, is up to 56% even after a couple of bad shooting games. And so that's above the league average. And it's one thing when you're a dominant rebounder, but a liability on both ends of the court. And, you know, he really needed to take a big step forward in both of those areas, and he's doing it this year. It's great to see.
Yeah, it really is, and again, the hope is that they can continue this. Just real quick, because I mentioned the Cavs, and they are certainly, well, obviously three-time Eastern Conference defending champions, and they're also the other team we follow the closest here in Toledo. You said you see them kind of starting to, how did you phrase it a moment ago, get their head together or get their act together or something like that. They're only 500. I have a great concern for that team when it comes to finding their chemistry now, which is very hard considering how many new people are on that roster, seven new guys on that roster from the three-time conference champions. I feel as though it's going to take a while to get this chemistry down with Wade and Tristan Thompson's out. When he comes back, that's going to change things. And J.R. Smith on the bench or off the bench, Love at the five or at the four, Derrick Rose starting, not playing, Jeff Green being a big part of the rotation. All that stuff takes a while. And I feel like once they get it figured out, they're going to be pretty good, but then they're going to have to stop and start the whole thing over again when Isaiah Thomas comes back in February. And it's probably going to be February. And when he comes back as the starting point guard and a massive ball-dominant guy who's a 29-point scorer, it changes the dynamics of everything that they will have spent the last 3 months working and building. So I don't have a lot of high hopes that that team is going to be the Eastern Conference champion again. Am I overthinking or overstating that from a, you know, working together kind of standpoint?
It's certainly possible. The Celtics have certainly been able to overcome Gordon Hayward's injury way better than I ever expected they would.
Me too.
But the thing with the Cavs that really opened my eyes early on in the season was how many of those games they were getting blown out in that first six or seven games. It seemed like they got blown out in four or five of them. And so it seems like at least over the past few games they've at least been able to keep it close, which is kind of weird to have as a standard for a, you know, the team that's expected to be the most dominant team in the East. But the comeback they had against the Knicks was really impressive, and so it seems I just have decided that I don't want to bet against LeBron James very often anymore, and so I expect that they'll probably I would put my money that they do wind up in the Eastern Conference Finals, at least. Whether they're able to win it all handily like they've typically done, it might be a little tougher, but I think they've just got too much talent there. I really like Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder with their grittiness. They really do need to figure out.
Crowder's been a little disappointing, I think, through 14 games. I think Jay Crowder's been actually very disappointing. I expected more from him, you know, playing with LeBron James, LeBron being the great facilitator that he is. You know, he's a great scorer, yes, but, you know, we know about his assist. I don't know. I expected more from Jay Crowder than what I've seen thus far. Again, is that just fit and time and chemistry?
No, I get that. I mean, what I like about Jay Crowder is what he brings to the defensive end of the court, his toughness, his, he's a very fiery, passionate guy. And I would not expect a team that's got Jay Crowder to be dead last in the league in defensive rating. So I've been a bit surprised by his transition so far.
5 days away from the next showdown between the Pistons and these Cavaliers that we are discussing now. That one will be that's at Detroit, right? I think that's in the Little Caesars arena. So that'll be on Monday, the 20th, and we'll look forward to that. From DetroitBadBoys.com and SB Nation site, editor Steve Hinson has been our guest. Steve, thanks for breaking it down and talking Pistons, basketball, and NBA Eastern Conference all the way around. We appreciate the time.
Sure thing. Always my pleasure.
You got it. Thanks much. We'll check you out. You've got to watch how you say that. When you say it's always your pleasure, we're going to take advantage of you and have you on all the time.
Oh, sounds good. I think it's fun.
Thanks, Steve. Always appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. You know what else I appreciate? I appreciate people who try to stop me from being cold all the time. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Car Stereo One. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the fact that Car Stereo One has the answer to the winter cold that's coming your way, and the answer is stay out of the cold by getting yourself a remote car starter from Car Stereo One. That's right. It works with your smartphone, and normally this will cost you in the dead of winter about $300 to buy and have installed. If you do it now from Car Stereo One, $195 installed. That's right. You have got to go and see Steve and the guys at Car Stereo One. It's going to be a phenomenal deal for you. $195 installed. It works with your smartphone. All you do is tap. You can start your car, and then you don't have to stand out shivering and scraping the windows and getting into a frozen car. It'll be nice and toasty for you when you get it started from your smartphone in the building you are. Car Stereo One, it's on Central, block east of Secor. If you need directions, go find it at carstereo1.com. Turtle. All right, coming up in the next half hour, two things. We have got Beat the Box Office tickets, Bare Naked Ladies. They're coming to the Toledo Zoo in June. Yes, I know it's a long way away, but the tickets go on sale Friday. So we've got to give you these tickets today. I've got five pairs of tickets I'll be giving away over the course of today and tomorrow, probably about three pairs in the next hour of the program. So stay where you are, Bare Naked Ladies, with special guests Better Than Ezra and Katie Tunstall. That will be coming up in the next half hour. And then don't forget, I-75 battle tonight, and we're going to talk to the head coach of the UT Rockets, Jason Candle, at 4:40 as we continue right here on The Ticket.
I think what gave Clemson the edge this week over a Miami team that has really impressed us the last 2 weeks was the win against Auburn. They have two road victories that are very impressive to the committee. Miami's not played a winning team on the road yet, and that's something that has given Clemson a slight edge this week with their performance on the road. Wisconsin, we've said the schedule is there. We were impressed with the win over an Iowa team who defeated Ohio State the week before. Wisconsin continues to execute their offense in the manner that they do. The defense is what has really impressed this selection committee. The style of play that Wisconsin is on defense, their productivity on the defensive side of the ball is something that has really impressed the selection committee. Every win, every loss is a part of the body of work, the resume that we look at each and every week. We don't incent margin of victory, but we know when a convincing victory takes place. So if we find ourselves in that position as we have, and I'm sure we will in the 3 weeks ahead, the selection committee will have to work hard and make sure we get it right, which we will.
It would be huge. It would be awesome for our fan base. It would be awesome for our student-athletes. You know, it would be awesome for our program and recruiting and everything of that nature, especially on the national stage. It's a big ball game, and there's a lot riding on it. I mean, it's pride on our end, and if we're able to get the victory, you know, not allow them to go to the MAC championship game. So, but it'll be a highly contested affair.
Well, that's why you come to the University of Toledo. You know, you come to play. One of the reasons is to come play in this football game. You know, we don't spend a ton of time singling out opponents through the off season and making one game more important than any of the other ones because they all count the same. But you're kidding yourself if you don't think that this one, you know, doesn't mean more to our community and the fans and the people around here. You know, you can go into any office building in our city and you're going to find an office that has a Bowling Green degree on the wall, and you're going to find one right down the hall that's got a Toledo degree on the wall. So this is good for the pageantry of college football and the camaraderie of the fans and just everything that of what college football is all about.
Now 9 of 11 on the road. The next three games on the road against teams you beat at home, so you know they want back at you. So the challenges just keep mounting. You put wins in the bank, but there's going to be tough stretches in the season. You put wins in the bank, and our guys, I mean, on this homestand did a hell of a job. And any time you go from Sunday to Wednesday without playing, you got to win that game. That was the other problem with the Laker game. You're coming home, you play on a Tuesday, you got Wednesday and Thursday off before you play, and the taste in your mouth is the freaking Laker game. And so tonight, you go from Sunday to Wednesday, and the taste in your mouth is this game. So I can go out to dinner tonight with my son and my wife, and enjoy it. That's what's important about this game right here.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. We roll onward at 4:15, continuing on the extravaganza. Yeah, skipping the beginning and the end of that montage right to the middle. Mike Jinks and Jason Candle, you heard them addressing the pageantry of college football. It is what it's all about. It's so true. So many people, you know, all over Northwest Ohio and really in other parts of the country, too. But in Northwest Ohio, they have a BG or a Toledo banner, pennant, or degree hanging on their wall. And that's what makes this so much fun. We got Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, coming up with a little preview in about, I don't know, 25 minutes or so from now. We'll hear from Mike Jinks in reaction to the game a little bit later this week. So we get you covered from both sides, whether you're a Rocket fan or a Falcon fan. As I promised, going into the top of the hour, local sports center that Kush gave you, we've got Beat the Box Office tickets. The Bare Naked Ladies are coming to the Toledo Zoo in June, on the 24th of June. Special guest Better Than Ezra and KT Tunstall. If you would like to go, because these tickets go on sale Friday, if you would like to go, we're going to help you beat the box office for free. That's right, for free. You dial us up. Callers number 5 and 6 right now. That's right. Put Cushland's little happy fingers to work. Make him answer phones and write down names and numbers. We're going to set you up. Callers 5 and 6 right now. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We're going to send you to Bare Naked Ladies. And guess what? I've got another pair I'm going to give away before the end of this show as well. So make sure you are paying attention for the next cue to call. All from your friends right here at the Ticket. So, back to a little bit more of what we heard in the montage. We didn't get a chance to talk a ton about it in the first hour of the program. And that is what we have talked a ton about, however, yesterday on Monday and really the last couple of weeks since the College Football Playoff Committee got to work and they announced their first rankings. Now that we are at this particular stage of the game with really 2 weeks of regular season games left before conference championship, sometimes just known as Championship Saturday, on December 2nd, it's starting to get a little more real now, isn't it? Even though these are still not definitive, they kind of matter a little bit. So let's take a look at the college football playoff rankings as they were announced last night. The biggest news for me was the jump from Wisconsin from number 8 in the survey, or in the, not even a survey, that's what a poll is. This is the rankings by the committee. The Badgers at 10-0, the best record in college football. They share that with Alabama. Of course, Miami's undefeated as well, but they're 9-0. They had a game cancellation. But the Badgers at 10-0, not getting a whole lot of love, not getting a whole lot of respect because of the strength of schedule that they have faced this season. But they were only 8th with their 9-0 record last week. Their win over Iowa, which was impressive because it followed Iowa's demolition of Ohio State by 31 points 2 weeks ago, was enough for the committee to jump the Badgers up 3 full spots. They were 8th. They are now 5th, just barely on the outside of the Final Four looking in. And that might not be a bad place to be. For if the Badgers are able to handle Michigan this week, and I don't know how, you know, impressive the committee would see a win over Michigan at this stage. But if they're able to win and win somewhat impressively, they could just sit here and wait for somebody to fall. Remember, Clemson and Miami, who were 2 and 3 in the survey, play one another at the end of the season in the ACC championship game. One of them is going to fall and get out. Oklahoma is going to have to play a conference championship game, as we know, against the second-best team in the Big 12. They're just one loss away from falling, and obviously Alabama has the Iron Bowl against Auburn sitting directly behind the Badgers. Auburn at 6 before their the SEC's championship game that one of them will be in. So Wisconsin is just sitting there poised. There was a question literally as recently as yesterday and certainly as recently as a week ago and 2 weeks ago as to whether or not the committee would possibly overlook Wisconsin and not, you know, include them in the Final Four if they finished undefeated with a weak schedule. Undefeated Big Ten champion, by the way, but with a weak schedule. Would the committee overlook them and pass them over for a one-loss team? And it would appear that as of a week ago, they might. But now that they have been jumped from the 8th spot to the 5th spot, I think that's over. I think maybe that part of the discussion can be put to bed. I mean, how do they not, if they beat Michigan, If Wisconsin takes care of business this week and beats Michigan and then wraps up their season with a win that will, again, be less impressive, it's Minnesota. Michigan, by the way, is 24th in the college football playoff rankings. Not very high, but they are top 25. Minnesota, of course, is not ranked. If Wisconsin is able to beat Michigan and then Minnesota and win the Big Ten championship game, which would probably be against Ohio State, it's impossible to think that they would not go from the five where they currently reside into the top four when there are going to be losses in the top four. Let's be honest. Alabama has the Iron Bowl against Auburn. They either cement themselves in there with a win over Auburn or they become a one-loss team, and Auburn, with two losses, vaults somewhere up in the rankings. Remember, they're one spot now behind Wisconsin. If Auburn beats Alabama, their 8-2 becomes 9-2, and guess what? And at that point, actually, it would be 10-2. And guess what? That will be a two-loss team that everybody says we have to include them, at least until we see what happens in the SEC championship game. The ACC game is a little more clear. Well, at least it could be. Clemson is 9-1. They have one loss, and it might be considered by some to be a bad loss because it was to Syracuse. But guess what? That was our guy, Dino Babers, former coach of Bowling Green, and I like him. And I like Syracuse. I'm not going to ding Clemson too hard for it, but it is, you know, especially in a situation where so many teams in this top 25 have one loss. But Clemson and Miami will battle in the ACC championship game. If Miami wins, there's just no doubt they're in, and Clemson will have two losses. They're out. Wisconsin just sitting idly by waiting. If they again remain undefeated, of course they'll be in. But then what happens? This is what the committee has to figure out. Oh, as I say, congratulations. Sorry. Joe Haas of Delta and Randy Shart of Lambertville. They are the winners of the two Bare Naked Ladies Beat the Box Office pairs of tickets that we have. And I've got more. I've got three more total. I'm going to give one more today and two more tomorrow. So be paying attention for that. But let's suppose for a second, and we talked about this, Cushlin, if you're back,
a little bit
yesterday. Now that we see that it is what we thought, it's Bama, Clemson, Miami, and Oklahoma. I didn't know the order, but we knew those would be the four. Wisconsin being the most interesting move because they move from 8-5. They are just barely on the outside waiting for their spot in, followed closely behind by Auburn, a two-loss team, but a team that has a huge, massive blowout win over Georgia, which was then number one, and a chance when they face Alabama to get another massive win that would essentially cement them, as long as they don't trip and stumble in the SEC championship game, with a place. They have Louisiana Monroe. It'll be a tune-up win for them on Saturday. Then they will have that Iron Bowl against Bama the next week. So let's focus on the two middle teams in this Final Four as of today, Clemson and Miami. If it is Clemson knocking off Miami, Clemson cements its place in that top four. They are there. No question about it.
I agree with that.
They'll be 11-1 at that point in time. Or I'm sorry.
No, they'd be 11-1.
11-1. Okay, yeah, because they have. No, wait. They would be 12-1.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, they still, 12-1. Yeah,
they still have to play Citadel and South Carolina.
Right, of course.
Which, by the way, is a rivalry game. And so even though South Carolina is not, you know, a ranked team right now, you know how rivalry games are.
Yes.
So, but assuming that Clemson is taking care of business and they beat Miami in that showdown in the ACC championship game, you literally will have Clemson staking their place. There's no way anybody's getting them out of there. Miami is then the question mark. Would a then 10-1, because remember they were a game behind everybody. They had a cancellation. If Miami finishes at 10-1, losing that ACC championship game, does that disqualify them from the top? I would submit to you, if Wisconsin takes care of their business, it does. That will be the team that falls out and allows the Badgers, if they win the Big Ten championship. Jim, a week ago, there was a legit question nationally. They were talking about it on ESPN when the committee made their selections or their rankings known, that the Badgers might be a 13-0 team that is shut out because their strength of schedule is just so poorly rated. But now that they've gone from 8 last week in this Final Four, or in the playoff rankings looking for a Final Four, up to 5th, they just have to wait. If Alabama drops, if Clemson drops, Miami drops, or Oklahoma drops, they are there to slide right into place. It's difficult to see them not being included in this if they take care of business against Michigan, Minnesota, and then in the Big Ten Championship.
Well, I'll start with the Wisconsin part because you and I have kind of touched on this already, and we both agree, you know, in the principle that, yes, if a Wisconsin schedule weakness aside is able to go undefeated and win the Big Ten, that they should be one of the four. Our question has been, based on the first
whether
couple
they
weeks,
would.
Right, exactly.
They should, but whether they would. And I think that answer, Jim, was given yesterday,
yes,
which is why it was my lead story in this, too.
That's exactly
by
where I was going
with this. By the fact that they're sitting
this.
At five. They have essentially
exactly.
been told, okay, we're not going to ding you for that schedule. You're 10-0. Other teams are dropping. You're rising. If you just take care of business, you
exactly.
know one, at least one and maybe two of the current Final Four are going to lose
yeah.
between now and, through Championship Saturday.
Heck, I'll even spin that last part a different way. You have because you have Alabama at one, Auburn 6, Georgia 7, because Georgia's already clinched that East Division, ergo the winner of the Iron Bowl is getting Georgia. So two of those three are going to be defeated at some point. And then the ACC title game of Clemson-Miami, which, by the way, both sides have already clinched. That is fully and formally already set. In theory, one of them gets dinged back down. And, yeah, Miami had one of those games canceled because of those hurricanes. So,
correct.
So if they were to suffer the one loss, and the one loss being Clemson, they would be 11-1 when it's over. And I think that's going to be, for an unfortunate reason, even though I don't like the U at all, I'm the one who has often said, and part of this is my Virginia Tech thing, that the only good thing to ever come out of the U was Bernie Kosar. But an 11-1 Miami will be right there at about number four in such a situation. It's a matter of how the rest of it falls, if they're going to be at four, yeah. in my opinion, or four or five when the final one comes out. Yeah, Clemson wins the ACC. They're one of the four. And there's a small argument, in a way, especially if it's Alabama, that finishes undefeated, that they could knock out both Auburn and Georgia, because Auburn would then be with three losses. They're not getting
correct.
No one's
no,
going
no, they
anywhere.
No, no, yeah, they have no choice but to go
and
undefeated the rest of the way,
two
beat
loss,
Alabama, beat Georgia.
Yes, yeah, same with a two-loss Georgia. That's why, in a twist way, I was expanding that to seven and saying, really, three of these, at least three of those top seven are going to be defeated and knocked down as we go. So, yeah, we got our answer from the committee that, yes, your schedule is a little light right now, and that's why you're still five, but we've now put you in the position, Wisconsin, that if you take care of your business and stay with zero losses, you'll probably be by default as number three or four.
There is also the question, Jim, about whether or not the Buckeyes, that I think we kind of just dismissed from playoff contention after that blowout 31-point loss in Iowa, whether or not they could benefit at the number nine spot now from all kinds of chaos, which you were rooting for.
Yes, I am. Anything to make it easy for us to look at and say, this is a great year for 18 playoff, I'm in favor for.
The chaos, by the way, is not impossible to have happen. And here's what I mean. Let's just look at some of the top teams. Clemson is 9-1. Miami is 9-0 right now. Let's assume that in the ACC championship game, it is Clemson defeating Miami, giving Miami a late season loss.
Yep.
That quite honestly, the committee does not like to see. That could drop the Hurricanes down and out of it.
That's where I'm thinking it'll be four or
Oklahoma,
five. Oklahoma,
hold on, I got a lot more for you.
I know.
Oklahoma, which is sitting in the four spot now, let's just presume a Big 12 championship game loss to two loss TCU. Now Oklahoma has two losses and a last late season one. They're down and out.
Yep.
Wisconsin is sitting there undefeated, number five right now, but if Ohio State beats them in the Big Ten championship game, they have one loss. Ohio State with two losses would jump them because of head-to-head and the fact that Wisconsin's schedule, of course, has been kind of sneezed at. Auburn sitting at 8-2. Let's suppose they do knock down undefeated Alabama. And that gives Bama a loss, and then they're not even in the conference championship game, which the committee will not like.
Yeah, that's true.
And then if Auburn goes into that conference championship game and loses it to Georgia, now you got a three-loss Auburn.
They're out.
And exactly. But could you put Georgia in over them, considering they will have been 1-1 in the last 4 weeks of the season against one another?
Believe it or not, that last part you laid out, I was actually thinking as you were saying it, no, it's to Ohio State's benefit in these scenarios that it be Alabama. Because in kind of a scenario where you lined out, where Auburn wins the Iron Bowl and then, say, Georgia
and loses to Georgia,
I think they might give it to both Georgia and Alabama. I really do.
I can't see them doing that. I mean, what did Auburn beat Georgia by?
41-8.
What did 41-8? No, 40-17.
40-17, yeah.
40-17. No, I just can't. I cannot see that happening. My point is, I've just, through straight attrition, you know, we can knock probably six or seven of the eight teams that are ahead of Ohio State out with legitimate outcomes, not crazy, what if Louisiana Monroe?
Yeah.
Legitimate major matchups. If they all break the right way, Ohio State wins impressively in their last two games and then wins the showdown in the Big Ten Championship game, the Buckeyes could conceivably be still in this hunt.
Now, I'll give you this. Based on the rankings and based on those types of attrition scenarios, and, yeah, we can only look at legitimate possibilities, not Louisiana Monroe or
right.
Citadel.
And those are all legitimate and realistic.
Right, and they could.
But hey, if you're not going, Kush, if you're not going to the Deut tonight to sit in the rain and watch the Battle of I-75, you know the best place to watch all of your sporting events that you can't get tickets to, it's Buffalo Wild Wings. And you can earn loyalty points at B-Dubs with blazing rewards. And if you hurry, you can earn those points by eating limited-time items like the Cali Chicken Sandwich, the Fiesta Pork Tacos, or the 35th Weck Sandwich, and more. And don't forget about this perfect pairing. For the Blue Moon Belgian White Beer, it's the Blue Moon Barbecue. Get those together like a quarterback-receiver combo. It can't be beat. Available for a limited time while supplies last, and only at Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, and sports. Please drink responsibly. Kush, since it is 4:31, and as I mentioned, we are talking about the Battle of I-75, we got Jason Candle, the head coach of the Rockets, set and on standby to talk about this game from a preview perspective. We will hear from head coach Mike Jinks of BG in a post-view perspective later this week.
Tomorrow, actually.
Oh, that'll be tomorrow. We'll hear from Mike Jinks reacting to the outcome of this game tonight. So we want to get out here, get a local sports center, and get there. And on our way to the local sports center, Jim, I'm going to make you work once again and give that last pair for today of Beat the Box Office tickets to Bare Naked Ladies at the Toledo Zoo on June 24th. Those tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. We'll give them to you now. One pair, caller 5, 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We will set you up with Bare Naked Ladies, along with special guests Better Than Ezra and KT Tunstall. And then we're going to talk some I-75 with head coach, a battle of I-75 that would be with head coach Jason Candle coming up right here on the ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kushlin here to close out a Wednesday edition, Battle of I-75 edition, as we're obviously talking some more college football right now. It's Little Rockets, Bowling Green Falcons. That is tonight from the Deut. It's a rivalry game. It's always fun. And we're going to recap from the Rockets' perspective of everything, what happened before, and what to look forward to tonight. And to help us do that, we once again welcome back to the show head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us. Hi, Coach. How you doing? Hey, not too bad. It's rivalry night. It's a fun night. We're going to get to that in a second. But as we always like to do, let's review what happened before an unfortunate outing a week ago at Ohio, 38-10, defeated in this one. Still control your own destiny, do you guys, for the MAC West title. But a game that just didn't go your guys' way. And to me, the first thing that stands out is how much rushing yards the Bobcats gained on this night.
Yeah, I think both lines of scrimmage on either, you know, the offensive line and the defensive line, I thought we were, you know, for the first time probably since the Miami game a little bit out-physicaled. You know, and when that happens, you don't play well. And, you know, they turned the ball over a couple times in the first half, and as did we, but, you know, really neither team could capitalize on those and turn them into points. So, you know, we got down. And they scored the first drive in the third quarter and got us down 17-7. And once that happened, they just started to lean on us a little bit and ran the ball, stay ahead of the sticks, and, you know, got themselves in third and shorts, and we just couldn't get off the field. You know, couple that with our inability to pick up third down conversions on offense ourselves, turned into a bad night, a night that, you know, you got beat, and you got beat honestly.
Yeah, and it was just one of those nights. They happen in college football. We've talked time and again in the past, Coach, that this is what happens sometimes in the Mid-American Conference because these teams are you know, so congested together, a lot of parity, as we know, in this league. And of course, this was also a game of division leaders in their building. Was more of the second half just a matter of the mistakes, especially on Ohio's side stop, so they were able to get those extra yards and get the points? Because you guys were still, for what it's worth, only trailing by three going into the locker room. But as you mentioned, a lot of turnovers in that first half.
Well, I think, you know, kind of a key moment was the last 2 minutes and 30 seconds of the second quarter. You know, we tackle their quarterback. He fumbles the ball. The ball's bouncing around. You know, it's at their 26 or 7 yard line. Our guy goes to pick it up and just doesn't quite get his handle on it. And it kicks it out of bounds. So, He picks it up. He walks in for a score there. We're up 14-7. Doesn't. They have to punt. You know, we let the punt bounce on the 50-yard line. It rolls down to our 30. You know, we got the ball. Could have the ball back at midfield right there with under 2 minutes to go and get a chance to go down and get a score. But we get it moving a little bit. We throw an out route to our receiver. He puts the ball on the ground and fumbles it, and they're able to take that, go down and kick a field goal. We go into half down 10-7. They get the ball the first drive of the third quarter and go down and score and make it 17-7. So, you know, there's a key three-minute snapshot there of, you know, man, oh, man, just the way the ball bounced for us, and it was a tough moment. And we just, like I said, we weren't able to, you know, to recover from that, and it kind of snowballed on us a little bit there when we had to play behind the, you know, play behind the sticks a little bit and not stay balanced on offense, which is who we are. And then, like I said, they were able to just, you know, run the football at us and lean on us, and we couldn't get off the field.
Yeah, and there's so much of what you said. There's a lot of factors showing the, you know, intricacies of how the ball can bounce, quite literally in this case, to alter outcomes and progression of a singular game. And one thing that I'm left with is, okay, you know, you have drives like that. Okay, but now it's in the past. You're coming out of halftime. It's still at that point, you know, as I said, just a three-point game. Again, despite the mistakes and issues in maybe that first half. But then when they get rolling like that, is that one of the most helpless positions as a coach, knowing that, hey, there's just nothing I could do? They are out physicaling us in terms of physicality on this night. Is that just one of the more frustrating positions to be in as a coach? Because there's not a lot of, you know, play calls outside of real trickery that can really, you know, stop that.
Well, I think, you know, we got ourselves into that point in time. I think at times we looked like a tired football team in that game. You know, I got to do a better job in game prep of making sure our guys are, you know, feeling a little bit better when we get into these midweek games in the late October, November. We just haven't, you know, we played a lot of football in the last month, you know, and you know, they got a couple weeks. They got a 10-day break, I think, and a 9-day break, or an 8 and a 9. And, you know, they're probably a little more fresh than we were. And, you know, like I said, all things considered, that all piles up. And you got the result that we got the result that we deserved. You know what I mean? We didn't play good. They played well. It is what it is, you know. But this game can't beat you twice. You can't sit around and worry about it. I don't sit around and brag about wins, and I sure as hell aren't going to sit around and cry about these losses. So we got to get off the mat and go fight and play a team that we know very well, and in a game that means a lot to this community and a lot to both fan bases and both universities. So we better respond, you know, or we'll be sitting here having this conversation again next week.
Absolutely, Coach, and a great segue. It's obviously we're the main topic of where we're going with this, because tonight it is a rivalry battle of I-75. You guys are in Bowling Green. I guess the last tag real quick on the Ohio game is you still come into this game, as I mentioned, still, despite the loss, in control of your own destiny in that West Division, starting with, you know, a tiebreaker, for example, over Northern Illinois. So you still have a ton to play for out there, and then you amplify it, of course, by the wonderful rivalry night. First, before we get into some of the nitty-gritty, Coach, your thoughts on this rivalry. I always love to ask you guys, you and your counterpart over there, Bowling Green, what your thoughts are about this this great, great rivalry, which adds another chapter later tonight.
Well, it's why you come to the University of Toledo. You know, you come to play. One of the reasons is to come play in this football game, you know, and I think, you know, we don't spend a ton of time singling out opponents through the off season and making one game more important than any of the other ones, because they all count the same. But you're kidding yourself if you don't think that this one, you know, doesn't mean more to our community and the fans and the people around here. You know, you can go into any office building in our city and you're going to find an office that has a Bowling Green degree on the wall, and you're going to find one right down the hall that's got a Toledo degree on the wall. So, you know, this is good for the pageantry of college football and the camaraderie of the fans and just everything of what college football is all about. So, yeah, it's different. You know, that's, like I said, that's why you come to this place, and that's, you know, probably one of the reasons why you go there as well, to play in this football game. So it's a big one for us, for our kids, for each, you know, institution, and certainly for us coaches as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So well said there, Coach. We're talking with head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, leading up to tonight's battle of I-75. 7 o'clock the pregame time, by the way, with the 8 o'clock kick from the Doit. You know, obviously, when you get into some of the nitty-gritty, Coach, for this one, thinking about it from that football perspective, Bowling Green's had a struggling season. You guys have had their number more or less in the last couple of years. They've been playing a lot of young younger guys as Coach Jinks down there still trying to filter some things through. But obviously, it all gets thrown out, as we know, for rivalries. And, of course, because this is still MAC football and anybody can beat anybody, in this case, on any given Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Any circumstance that's out there, any issues going on with your football team, your football program, it doesn't matter. I mean, at 8 o'clock or 8:03 or whatever, whenever you kick the ball off Wednesday night, there's 60 minutes of truth there, and, you know, you live with the results.
Absolutely. All right. Now, where, from your standpoint, try to game plan for this one, especially based on, you know, where they are right now, you know, filtering guys in and out, a lot of young guys playing for them. What's the biggest thing you would want to be able to attack from your perspective in this matchup to get you guys going?
Well, it's interesting because I think both teams have a lot of young guys playing in the game. Which is only important and only a factor because, you know, the newness of everything to those guys when it comes to playing in this type of a game. So, I think what I've been able to witness there of, you know, the short time I've been able to watch those guys on videotape is that, you know, their quarterback is settling into who he is. I think he's got a really talented group of wide receivers, probably as good a group as anybody in our conference at that position. Two young backs that are playing really well. Much like us, they're kind of been a revolving door on the offensive line due to all the injuries that they've had. Very similar to our situation here. You know, and then on the defensive unit, I see some names that have been on that depth chart for the last 3 to 4 years, and Nate Locke, the linebacker, is a guy that comes to mind and a guy that's been their probably their model of consistency at linebacker and kind of the heartbeat of the whole deal, and some of those DBs have played for a while. So, and again, you're seeing some new faces over there too. So, it's about, you know, getting your team rallied together, playing really good, and handling what you've set out to do and putting a game plan together and executing. And because, you know, when a game like this, I think emotions can get caught up in a lot of it and can be, you know, if you get caught up in that world of riding the wave of emotion and you don't execute your plan, you're not going to have the success you want.
And that feels so important in a game like this, Coach, you know, to be able to maintain that kind of focus when the extra things are going on because of the rivalry, et cetera, and so on. And how important is it, especially early on, to set that tone, to make sure, you know, they're focused, that they're executing the game plan, cutting down on the mistakes, that sort of thing?
Well, I think you want to be poised. You want to be composed. But also there's a fine line there of, you don't want to leave any emotion in the locker room. You know what I mean? You have to empty the tank when you get on the field, but you have to do it in the right way. And that's a, you know, every coach in America is striving for that right, trying to concoct the right recipe to make sure that that happens each and every week, and then also to try to maintain it, you know. So very fragile, thin line there, and, the margin for error there is razor sharp, and, you know, you just don't, like I said, You gotta play emotionally, but you have to play stable and you have to play poised.
Yeah, and in terms of balance is another word, as you were talking just now, that popped into my head about this, and it works for the emotions. It also works for the game planning. We were talking a few minutes ago about the loss last week at Ohio. One thing that stood out to me that you had said, Coach, was, hey, you know, they got us into a situation where we were off balance on offense, not able to do the kind of things we want to do. This offense specifically, as we all know, I think, it works so much better when you're able to balance the passing of Logan Woodside and the running game all is one and be able to, you know, execute and get the positive yards. So obviously balance seems to be another thing that you guys would want to be able to get in this one.
Yeah, I think we probably found ourselves in that situation in that game, you know, probably, you know, since the first time, you know, the first time all year since probably the third quarter of the Miami game. You know, we're able to stay really balanced through the first half of the OU game too, and the Miami game, you know, and in the third quarters are really both of those games we got behind a little bit, and both opponents were really good running teams. And, you know, when you can chew the clock and you can stay ahead of the sticks and turn those drives into points, that's kind of, it's deflating for the other team because now you have to abandon a little bit of who you are at the core and, you know, try to make some things happen. And you either, when you're trying to make things happen, either they do happen or they don't. And in our case, they didn't.
Head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us here on the Extravaganza. It's Battle of I-75 night. Toledo Rockets, Bowling Green Falcons from the Deut. The kickoff is at 8 o'clock. The coverage, by the way, will begin at 7 o'clock tonight. Coach, best of luck out there. Always enjoy this one. And we'll reconvene next week.
Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes to talk with us as we close out this Wednesday edition. I love what he said there, among other things. In this case, I'm referring to, you know, the rivalry and the pageantry of it and all that other stuff. This is what college football is, you know, is all about. And it really is. I mean, you know, on paper, if you don't know these teams the way we all do around here, you're thinking, oh, it's a mid-major game. Toledo's 8-2. Bowling Green's, you know, 2-7. Or 2-8, sorry. Oh, that's easy, Rockets. No, you can't do that. I believe it was last year. That was a more back-and-forth kind of game, or at least the year before. I'm flip-flopping them in my own head, sorry. But that was a back-and-forth game, despite everything on paper saying one should be better than the other. But that's not how college football works, in this case on any given Wednesday. And that's certainly not how rivalry games inside a conference like the Mid-American go. And it's going to be one of those nights, I think, again, especially if Bowling Green is able to do a few things that may knock the Rockets off kilter, whether it be offensively or defensively, earlier in this game. And then you could see it going back and forth, despite the, in theory, talent disparity. And it's not that big of a talent disparity. You were a coach right there. Everybody's dealing with their injuries, so there's even a lot of young guys, as we know, on this Rocket squad out there. It doesn't seem as accentuated as where Bowling Green is right now, but all that stuff, the cliche is, and it's so true, you got to throw this stuff out the window in a game like this, because, you know, there's so much to play for, in a way, for both sides. Even the 2-8 Bowling Green Falcons, I mean, 2-8, so they're not bowl eligible. They're too far out, you know, obviously, to rally for any kind of East Division title, and Ohio looks very, very strong. See their game last week against these very same Rockets. But you win the rivalry game, it helps mess up Toledo's season, because right now, of course, the Rockets tied with Northern Illinois, but due to head-to-head owning the tiebreaker, ergo in control of their own destiny for a West Division title and a spot in the MAC title game, which is a place the Rockets haven't been, of course, since 2004. So if you're Bowling Green, a win tonight makes up for, I wouldn't say everything, but the way this season has gone, darn near close to everything that's happened before on the scoreboard, if you can get a win against the Rockets in this one. Meanwhile, for Toledo, just kind of laid it out, you know, still in control of their own destiny for the MAC West title, getting to a MAC title game, most likely a rematch against those Ohio Bobcats, who, of course, you know, beat the Rockets last week and have a one-game and tiebreaker lead over Akron. So it's most likely, if Toledo can hang on and then get another win next week, of course, rematch against Ohio in a place, again, they haven't been in 13 years, the MAC championship game. And obviously, you know, even though the possibilities that I've been gloating about for so long of, hey, keep an eye on this, it could happen if the Rockets win out, group of five bid to the New Year's Six. Well, that's out the door now. But still, something that the Rockets haven't achieved in over a decade is still possible, and that is a MAC championship. So tons to play for. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be not so great out there, of course, either if you happen to be not watching this one on TV or are hearing it over on Talk Radio 100.7, as it's obviously raining here today. It's going to be clearing out as the evening goes along, but it should be yucky, chilly, as we're about 40 degrees will be, chilly, raining at times, and that's just what college football is in November, which of course could further complicate matters in what is another renewal of the great Battle of I-75 rivalry between the Bowling Green Falcons and the Toledo Rockets. And that's going to do it for us on this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out. Drive Time coming at you next, and then 7 o'clock right here on the ticket. Rockets, Falcons. It's going to be a fun one. 7 o'clock coverage, 8 o'clock the kickoff. We got it for you here on the ticket. Stick around. Mike Miller's coming at you with Drive Time, probably talking a little more about this and so much more. That's next here on the ticket. Stick around, and we'll recap this one and so much more tomorrow when we reconvene for a Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. See ya.